This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Today on the Jodcast, we have Dr. Emilia Carabrese from the University of Oxford. Hi, Emilia.
Hi. Hello.
So you came to talk to us today about ACT. What is ACT, to begin with?
So ACT is an acronym for the Atacama Cosmology Telescope. It is a telescope located in the desert of Atacama in Chile, looking at the sky in the microwave frequencies, and trying to get an image of a very faint radiation arriving to us in the microwaves and carrying with it basically the imprint of the universe evolution and composition.
Okay, so could you briefly explain what the cosmic microwave background is?
So the cosmic microwave background is the most ancient light that we can ever observe in our universe, because it is a radiation that was generated after a few seconds after the Big Bang, and then it was released when the universe became transparent. And since that moment to today, it traveled across the universe and arrives today very faintly, but at the same time with lots of information about all the evolution of the universe, and as well as information about what happened in the very early times of the universe, where we will be never able to go to see and to test things.
Okay, so ACT is one of these cosmic microwave background experiments. On the Jodcast, we've heard a lot about Planck, because it's had a big part of Jodrell Bank. So Could you explain why ACT is necessary, given that Planck exists?
Yeah, so I would say that Planck and ACT are complementary, and they both need each other in different ways. First, going to space with the Planck satellites allows you to have a better understanding on what's happening to very big separations in the sky. So if you look at two different points of your sky and you want to understand if those points are in communication with each other, if there is a correlation between these two points, and you want to see very large angular separated points, you need to go to space. And this is something that you can't get with ACT from the ground. On the other side, you can't bring to space a very heavy telescope, first because it will be expensive, you need more money, and also because it's hard to control a big telescope from space. But to have a bigger telescope allows you also to have a better resolution in your measurements. And so if you build on the ground a bigger telescope, you can reach a better resolution and to do measurements complementary to the Planck ones and have a full understanding of what's happening at all scales with the combination of the two experiments.
Okay, so you're saying that, yeah, so I'm just kind of, you're saying Planck is kind of the large scale and ACT is a small scale.
Exactly.
Could you briefly explain, like, are there any other particular things that you can find with these small-scale experiments?
Yeah. The point is that when you look at scales so small and with the resolution that ACT can achieve, you start being sensitive not only to the radiation, the cosmic microwave background radiation that you want to catch, but you start having in your data lots of emissions from other things in the sky, for example, clusters of galaxies or single galaxies emitting. And so you start having somehow a contamination for your cosmic microwave background data. And the key point in this thing is to have observations of the same sky at different frequencies, because you know that your microwave background radiation won't change with frequencies, but all the other emissions will change with frequencies. And so thanks to the fact that you have multiple frequency observations, you will be able to separate out your cosmic microwave radiation and to characterize at the same time all the emissions that are present in your data.
Okay, so could you give some kind of examples of these types of emissions that you're looking for?
Yeah, so you have either galactic and extragalactic emissions. You will have some thermal dust that is present in our galaxy and is emitting at some latitudes. You will have cluster of galaxies emissions, as well as the single galaxies emitting either synchrotron or infrared radiations that then are redshifted to your microwaves and then that you reveal as microwave emissions in your data.
Okay, so what is synchrotron radiation doing? So you just go through what the clusters affect. How do they affect your experiment.
So the galaxy clusters will distort your photons of this radiation coming to you. The interaction of your photons with the hot electrons in the clusters will give rise to a change in the temperature of the photons as well as in their frequency. And so you will get a distorted radiation given the interactions of the clusters in the sky. While the galaxies themselves, according to if they are very far from you and if they are emitting in a particular regime, they will give you an extra signal that is on its own and not affecting your radiation directly, but it will just appear as a sum of another contribution to your data.
Okay, so the work you specifically do is this to characterize these extra contaminations into your experiment and then remove them. Is that the work you mainly do?
Yes, mm-hmm. you do characterize them, and then you have two ways to proceed. Either you remove them and you produce a pure cosmic microwave background data set that you can work with for doing cosmology, or at the same time you keep track of these other emissions in your data, and you do a full analysis accounting for everything at the same time and studying how these contaminations can affect your cosmic microwave background cosmology estimation, or how these things are correlated between them.
So what is this cosmic microwave background parameter estimate, cosmic parameter estimation that you mentioned?
Once you get to the data, for example, the cosmic microwave background data, you have to build a theory that relies on some cosmological parameters to go to fit your data with. And this theory is generally accounting for all the things you know about the universe since it was born, all the components, how they interacted between them, and how they reach us together today. So at the end you have a very big theoretical background parameterized with a few quantities that are directly related to the universe content and primordial universe fluctuations. And these parameters are the things that you want to go to look at the end with this cosmic microwave background. So basically you want to infer on universe properties using the cosmic microwave background.
Okay, so the main aim for these experiments is to be able to correctly characterize these cosmological parameters.
Exactly.
And you said that ACT can help Planck. So in what way did ACT help Planck, and what particular parameters did it help?
So ACT helped Planck in, first of all, cleaning the cosmic microwave background from other contamination, because, as I said, they are complementary, and ACT was adding power to Planck exactly in the regions where these contaminations start to be important. So you were able to use ACT data to clean the Planck cosmic microwave background data. On the other side, there are some cosmological parameters that leave a clear imprint on your cosmic microwave background only in a certain range of scales. And in these scales, you have an overlap of Planck and ACT, and ACT helps you in getting there the right cosmology and the right, CMB answer to cosmology. In particular, for example, you can think to constrain very well the number of relativistic species present in the universe. We have, from the standard theoretical model, we do expect to have three light particles, namely neutrinos, in the universe. And with ACT and Planck in that region of overlap, you can have a very good measurement of these quantities, and so doing fundamental physics that was present in the early universe.
Okay, so you've helped to pin down how many relativistic particles other than these three neutrinos that we know of.
Yeah, exactly.
What else is interesting? These are the kind of the headline things that these cosmology papers come out with.
Yeah, you can characterize, for example, the abundances of light elements in the very early universe, so like how much helium there was in the very early time of the universe. And it is interesting and useful somehow because it's the base on which all the structures formed later in the universe. So if there was a certain quantity of helium, we would observe a certain kind of sky today. If there was a different amount of helium, we would have observed a different kind of sky today. So it's interesting to look at these primordial quantities to understand what happened later as well in the universe. And together with that, I mean, we have now a clear picture of the universe, saying that the universe is dominated by, for example, a dark energy component that is something that we don't know anything apart from the fact that it's driving the universe in an accelerated expansion today. And so you want to characterize this component, try to understand its physical properties, if it is present only today or if it was present also in the early universe. And so you can, with the cosmic microwave background, you can also have an understanding on how this component evolved and if it was present at early times and what are its properties, etc. So you can do any kind of fundamental physics that somehow led an imprint on the universe that you observe today.
Okay, so you're mainly talking about the power spectra. Are there any other particular things that ACT can do which Planck fails to because of its resolution?
You have complementary data also, for example, in other kind of observation, like detecting galaxy clusters with a particular effect, which is called the EZ effect. ACT and Planck are complementary in getting like a certain mass range for your clusters of galaxies, as well as positions in the sky, etc. So you really have, I mean, going to a better resolution with ACT, you really are able to reveal fainter things that are hidden inside the Planck data, and that is either the CMB, either any kind of object that you can see when you have this microwave data.
Okay, brilliant. At the end of your talk, you also mentioned the future of ACT.
Yeah.
Could you briefly explain what that would be?
So ACT was for 3 years an experiment devoted to temperature measurements of the sky. We now have a great measurement of the sky almost at all scales. Again, considering together Planck and ACT, you cover almost all scales you are interested in. The step forward is to go and to look for polarization of this cosmic microwave background, and both Planck and ACT will do that again in the same complementary way. So ACT is now moving to ACTPOL, which is same telescope but detector sensitive in polarization instead. And the future is to get measurement of polarization of the CMB same way.
Oh, brilliant. So what do you aim to try and get with this polarization of the CMB?
So the polarization are, there are two main observables that you can get out with the polarization, and they are, on one side, they can be considered a confirmation of what you have seen in temperature, because you do expect to see the same universe in the two observables. So they are, first of all, an independent proof of what you have seen in temperature. And on the other side, there are some effects that, let's say, have a major impact on polarization than compared to temperature, for example. For example, let's think about the effective species that I said before. The polarization of the CMB is determined by mostly the interaction, the Compton scattering of your photons of two electrons present in the universe, okay? So if you have more relativistic species, it means that you will also have more electrons in your universe, because they are directly related to each other. And this means that you will have a different prediction for the power of your polarization. And so measuring the power of the polarization will help directly in constraining better some parameters and some fundamental physics that's happening in the universe. As well as there are some polarization effects that are caused by the distribution of the structures in the universe that we see today, like galaxies, etc., that are things that formed in later times compared to the cosmic microwave background radiation. And so if you look at the polarization, you can have, let's say that you can track the whole path of your CMB from the moment it was released to today. In doing that, you get a pattern on what's the gravitational potential distribution in your universe, as well as what's the matter distribution of your universe, etc.
Could you briefly explain how you managed to do this tracking, and what is this?
So there is an effect that is called gravitational lensing, and it's basically the idea that if you have a photon from this cosmic microwave background traveling across the different structures of the universe, they will interact with the gravitational potential of each structure, and so they will be deflected a little bit, but they will be deflected. And so reconstructing this deflection field will give you a direct idea on how the gravitational potential settles down in your universe. And the gravitational potential is given by the matter in the universe itself. So you will have a dip where you have more matter, for example. And so tracing this effect will give you directly a pattern of the matter distribution in your universe, for example.
Brilliant. And what could you get with that? Because that sounds interesting in itself, but well, you've been talking about fundamental physics, so...
Yeah, that will give you, first of all, an idea of the dark matter distributions, which is the dominant matter component of the universe, and we still don't know anything about it apart from the fact that it dominates the gravitational field, as well as it gives you an idea of the geometry and the topology of the universe and how the structures are related to each other. And understanding these will help you in giving you an idea of what are the components of the universe, how they evolved, and so basically doing characterizing all the components of the universe themselves. Like, again, the dark energy I was mentioning before is responsible of the universe expansion, but if the universe is expanding, then the galaxies are in a certain way positioned in the universe. And if you track down the precise position of these galaxies and how they are located and how they interact with each other, you can have indirect information on the dark energy, for example.
Brilliant. That's very interesting. Thank you for coming along.
Thank you.